Our next case is 14-1404, Disciplinary Counsel versus Corner. For the relator, Mr. Drexel.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'm Scott Drexel, the disciplinary counsel for the Supreme Court, and I'm here to represent the office in connection with this matter. I'd like to start out first by emphasizing what's not contested in this matter, because the vast majority of the alleged misconduct in this matter is not contested. The Office of Disciplinary Counsel filed a three-count complaint against Ms. Corner. The first two counts were fully stipulated, both as to facts and alleged violations, and those violations were found by the board and are not at issue here. In the first count, Ms. Corner admitted that for a period of approximately 15 months that she repeatedly failed to keep IOLTA records that she was required to keep pursuant to Rule 1.15 of the Rules of Professional Conduct. This was after the Office of Disciplinary Counsel had previously conducted an investigation of a trust account overdraft and had supervised Ms. Corner's operation of her trust account for a period of about 8 months, at which time she assured the Office of Disciplinary Counsel that she was familiar with the rules and would comply, and in fact then subsequently took a course in IOLTA trust account management.
That oversight by the disciplinary counsel was not the result of a case.
It was not. Based upon our supervision of her trust account management, her assurances that she understood her obligations, we closed our investigation. Within a few months after that, after we closed the investigation, she had two more IOLTA overdrafts, and that resulted in both this count and in the discovery of the conduct that resulted in the filing of count two. In count two, Ms. Corner was charged with, admitted to, and was found culpable of misconduct in eight separate client matters in which she misappropriated funds that either belonged to the clients or was being held for the payment of third parties on behalf of the clients. In one case, she was also found culpable of lying to the client when the client demanded their property damage settlement that she had received. She blamed her inability to send them the woman the check on the fact that the bank had problems and would not allow her to write the check, when in reality, the reason was she didn't have the money because she had misappropriated it. It appears from the evidence that in each of these cases, while Ms. Corner did misappropriate the monies, that the individual clients have been repaid at this time.
And how was that accomplished?
In some cases, she took money from other clients to repay the money. Ultimately, I think she repaid the last of the people from her own personal funds.
There was no need to get the client security fund involved.
I do not believe in these cases. In the one matter, and there were co-relators in this case, both the Office of Disciplinary Counsel and the Columbus Bar Association, there was also a full stipulation in that matter, which I just refer to as the Packer matter. This is a little bit of a concern, although we're not the relator in that matter. Ms. Corner did acknowledge that she failed to competently represent her bankruptcy client, that she failed to be diligent in the representation. The bankruptcy court ordered Ms. Coroner in July of 2011 to disgorge the fees that she received from the client. And as of the time, at least as of the time of the hearing in this matter in April of 2014, that disgorgement had not occurred. Ms. Coroner has not repaid her client in that matter. It's outside the record as to whether or not the client has yet been repaid, but I believe it would be appropriate for this court in its final disciplinary order to make a condition of her of her reinstatement, the payment of any monies to Ms. Packer that have not been paid. So those are all undisputed allegations, fully stipulated. The board has found those. What is at issue here, obviously, is the third count that I'll refer to as the Floyd Evans matter. In its original board report that was filed on August the 12th, the board unanimously found that that Ms. Coroner had also violated Rule 1.5A, charged an excessive fee, and 1.15D, that she had failed to promptly pay one of the medical providers in full. That board report was submitted to this court, but because the board report did not reflect any amount of restitution that needed to be paid to Mr. Evans, the Office of Disciplinary Counsel requested that this court remand the proceeding back to the board to address the issue of restitution. And this court granted that request on September 15th of last year. The matter went back to the board. There was a conference call with the panel chair in September in which the process was discussed and whether there would be a further hearing, whether there would be briefing on the issue about both the amount of restitution or if the issue of culpability was in question on culpability. The
counsel, if I may.
Yes, you may.
I understand your historical procedural presentation. You are the Office of Disciplinary Counsel.
I am.
We are here today. What are you advocating as an outcome in this case?
Well, I think that notwithstanding, I think at a minimum there should have been an opportunity for us to brief and present additional evidence to the panel. And as a result of the inability or lack of an opportunity to do so, there were a number of things in the supplemental report filed by the board, I think, that are factually incorrect. But I think, nevertheless, there's sufficient evidence in the record in this case for you to find by clear and convincing evidence that, in fact, Ms. Coroner did violate Rule 1.5A and that she did violate Rule 1.15, subsection D. The other issue and the reason that we're here today is that we believe that the degree of discipline recommended by the board is insufficient.
And that's what I want to hear this morning. Yes. What is your position?
We believe that the discipline to be imposed in this case should be a 2-year suspension with no portion of that stayed, and conditions put on her reinstatement, both ensuring that restitution has been made in the Packer matter and restitution in the Evans matter, and also that she enroll in OLAP and provide evidence that she's completed a program recommended by OLAP.
Mr. Drexel, could you go back to the restitution issue and the Evans matter?
Yes. What happened factually in this case is that Mr. Evans was a driving instructor, and he and a student were engaged in a driving lesson, and another car collided with his car. I think there's evidence in the record that the driver of the other car was in the middle of texting and the like, and so collided with the car. The student driver was killed, and Mr. Evans was very seriously injured. Mr. Evans hired an attorney, Michael Gertner, for a 30% under a 30% contingent fee agreement. After about a year, Mr. Gertner filed the action on behalf, filed a cross claim against some of the defendants who had sued him or sued Mr. Evans. But ultimately, Mr. Evans terminated Mr. Gertner and hired Ms. Corner in his place, also with a written fee agreement for a 30% contingency. The evidence shows that there was no agreement between, certainly no written agreement between Mr. Evans and Ms. Corner as to who would be responsible for paying any portion of the fees by Mr. Gertner as the prior attorney.
I'd like to explore that for a second.
Yes.
My understanding of the record is he was asserting an attorney's lien in the ballpark of $11,000.
Yes, he originally...
It's a phrase that's troubled me for 40 years now. What's an attorney's lien?
Is it
legally enforceable?
I don't believe it is, Your Honor. I think it's certainly a claim that he would have based upon quantum merit. He, as having performed some services in this matter, he would have a claim for the reasonable value of his services.
Well, the reason I ask that question is obviously the client therefore owes the former lawyer the $11,000. Does that come out of the 30% of the new lawyer fee?
Yes, it's our office position that it does. I cited a number of cases in here. There is no Ohio disciplinary case on point. We're here today.
What do you want the law to be?
Well, I think in this contingency situation, the Indiana Supreme Court, I cited in my brief, Galanis versus Lloyd and Truett, basically established a rule or enunciated a rule. They actually quoted a Louisiana Supreme Court decision in doing that, said that there should be one contingency fee in situations where there are multiple attorneys who have operated under a contingency arrangement.
And then they divide that contingency in here, 30% was the agreement, and...
Right.
No attorney is going to get the full 30%.
That's correct. And what the court in Indiana had said was that you select the highest contingency fee to which the client, highest ethical contingency fee to which the client has contractually agreed. And so we have some cases where the first attorney may have agreed to do it for 33 1/3%. Second attorney may have agreed to do it for 40%. If they considered 40% to be an ethical standard, then 40% would be the level at which the client agreed.
But I guess that's my question today. Is that why we're looking for restitution in this case, is the misapplication of the percentages to the attorneys?
That's correct. Ms. Corner took her full percent, 30%, but she basically imposed upon Mr. Evans the obligation not only to pay her 30%, but to pay his $9,333.
And to be fair, didn't you within the last 2 or 3 minutes indicate that we don't have any clear-cut law in Ohio giving all lawyers, and particularly this lawyer in this case, guidance on the math?
Well, there is no Supreme Court opinion that I'm Ohio Supreme Court opinion that I'm aware
I'll
of
take that,
that
as a yes.
Guidance. That's correct. There are two Court of Appeal opinions in which the court applied this principle. Both the Goldacus versus Elyria Foundry Company and In re JF, both of which cited, well, in one case, in the Goldacus case, the court cited the Indiana Supreme Court decision. In the In re JF case, that court cited the same district court
so,
of appeals.
So you're suggesting you want this court to find that it was improper for the $11,000 for attorney number one to come out of the client's share as opposed to the lawyer's share.
That's correct.
That's
although
what you
although
want
the
us to
actual
hold.
Amount that was agreed to was $9,300 and some.
Well, counsel, there was, in these circumstances, when one attorney gets off the case and another attorney picks it up, there's an agreement to protect your fees as it's, you know, the same type of a responsibility, you know, the attorney shares with the medical providers and whomever else has worked on the case.
That's correct.
And that's the understanding of the duty of the attorney, correct?
Correct.
So whether there's an a statute that says it, or if there's an agreement between the attorney and the former attorney on that, that should be binding, correct?
Well, it is binding, and the question of is, and they did reach, Ms. Corner did reach an agreement with Mr. Gertner about the value of his services. So many of the cases we see where there are disputes over the division of fees, there is a dispute over how valuable the services that were provided and how you determine that quantum merit type situation.
There's an argument, I'm sure you've heard, that until the money is paid by the insurance company, no fee has been earned, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So, but in this case, Ms. Corner herself reached agreement with Mr. Gertner, and she agreed with Mr. Evans that this was the value of Mr. Gertner's.
Was it explained to Mr. Evans that I'm going to take a full 30% and then I'm going to take an additional $9,000-some-odd out of your settlement and pay that to your former attorney?
It was not. There is nothing in the record that indicates Ms. Corner acknowledged that there was nothing in writing in which she either reached an agreement with Mr. Evans or in which she advised Mr. Evans in writing that he would be responsible not only for her 30%, but also for
his. But that would have been okay had that been agreed to.
That's correct. If there had been an express agreement.
Then she could have treated him, the former attorney, like the doctor or, you know, whatever other service
right.
provider was owed money out of the proceeds.
Right.
And did any of these contracts have to be in writing according to our professional rules?
Contingency fee agreements do have to be.
And was there a writing between Gertner and Evans, to your knowledge?
There was a fee agreement between Gertner and Evans.
But no fee agreement between Evans and Corner.
There was also a fee agreement between Evans and Corner. Both of them were standard 30% fee agreements. Neither one of them addressed what the situation would be upon termination, you know, prior to the settlement.
But they were both in writing.
Yes, they were both in writing.
Mr. Drexel, it's a large fee dispute issue, but you haven't addressed either the OLAP contract that the respondent has engaged, nor the mental health issue. Did you care to address that?
Yes, I'd be happy to, Your Honor. Ms. Corner did present the testimony of one individual who is not a doctor or psychotherapist, but is a licensed, Ohio licensed therapist, I guess, who did say he'd been treating Ms. Corner for what he characterized as depression. She did not see him until July of 2013, so basically after the complaint and certificate were issued in this case. Mm-hmm. The board did not find this therapist, Mr. Cole, I think is how it's pronounced, did not find him particularly credible, and yet still said that, you know, she apparently has some depression and they would give her some mitigating weight as a mitigating factor in light of that. However, they recommended that she be required to go to OLAP and be evaluated.
But that was not part of your recommendation.
Oh, no, I did. When I can't remember who asked me what we would have you do, and I said that there should be restitution and she should be required to go to OLAP and participate in whatever treatment program or that they believed was appropriate.
So you would ask for 2 years out plus OLAP plus restitution.
That's correct.
And they're recommending 2 years with 1 year stayed.
With 1 year stayed, and the only condition they've attached is the OLAP. So no restitution either to Ms. Packer or obviously to Mr. Evans, since they recommended the dismissal of that count. Again, the board in recommending the 2 years with 1 year stayed cited both the ODC versus Talika and disciplinary counsel versus Falwell. We both in the closing and in our brief here have argued that the case that's much closer to these these facts is disciplinary counsel versus Lexan. It involved failure to comply with IOLTA requirements. It involved misappropriation for multiple clients. Like Ms. Corner, that respondent did not have prior discipline. Like Ms. Corner, that attorney said that he claimed to suffer from depression. He also had an alcohol and gambling addiction, and the court in that case ordered an indefinite suspension. We're not asking for indefinite suspension, but that we do believe 2 years out is appropriate. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Matthews.
Mr. Drexel, may it please the court. Again, I'm Alvin Matthews, and I'm here on behalf of the respondent, Beverly Corner. At the outset, we'd like to make a correction. Ms. Corner did pay restitution in the Packer matter, which is why it was not ordered by the board. It is found in Exhibit E. That's Respondent's Exhibit E, which was presented separately from the stipulations, which is probably why Mr. Drexel didn't pick up on it.
When was that paid?
It was paid immediately before the hearing. And that's
how much was that?
I think it was in the range of $9,000, but I don't remember the precise amount. It's indicated in Exhibit E.
All right, the restitution request from opposing counsel would include also the matter of the Evans case.
Right. And let's talk about Evans because the difference that I see, and it was interesting, Justice O'Neill talked about what should the rule be. What we have to look at here is, and also pointed out there was no existing precedent, what we have to look at here is that Relator is asking for Ms. Corner to be disciplined for this, for charging a clearly excessive fee. Not because this issue of the lien wasn't addressed in the agreement, but for charging a clearly excessive fee. They've charged her with a violation of Rule 1.5A. And Rule 1.5A says that a lawyer shall not charge a clearly excessive fee, one which is obviously unreasonable, and it sets forth those well-known factors for what constitutes an excessive fee. So that rule doesn't address this issue of the lien. What that is, in our view, is a fee dispute. And bar associations all over this state have fee dispute committees.
Well, counsel, let me. I want to explore that with you because I think the chief has raised a good question. When you get a case that's already been worked by someone, and the lawyer is saying, I guess he was saying, $11,000, and your client negotiated it down to $9,000, I'll protect your fee. Is that like a medical provider that's owed by the client to her former lawyer, or, as we're seeing here by the board? Should that come out of the 30% reasonable fee? Because right now, I think what the board is looking at is it's 30% plus 9,000.
Right. And they did the calculation, and it ended up being 36%, which is our point that it's not a clearly excessive fee.
Right.
It's 36% of the total recovery.
Shouldn't that have been agreed to with the client?
Ideally, yes.
Well, ideally, if I'm going to have to pay it out of my proceeds and I'm the injured party here, as Mr. Evans was, I'd like to have that clear.
Well, here's the thing. Mr. Gertner had represented Mr. Evans for quite a bit of time. That's how he got up to $11,000. So Mr. Evans knew about this. Ms. Corner obviously knew about it too. And the reason I said ideally, and you're right, it should be there, should be agreed upon. But our point is that's not a disciplinary issue. The fact that this lien was out there and it wasn't addressed in the contingency fee agreement whether that should be an issue that an amount that Ms. Corner should absorb, or whether Mr. Evans should pay it. That wasn't clarified.
And the board agreed with you on that.
Yes, they did, and that's why they dismissed it. The other point, and this is a key point in these matters, is that the relator has the burden of clear and convincing evidence. Mr. Evans did not appear at the hearing, did not testify. No evidence was presented from him other than Ms. Corner was questioned about, you know, what his view was on it. But he didn't come in and say, I want that money. In fact, I believe in their brief, relator says, well, if he doesn't want it, it should go to client security fund. And so now we're taking money that a client hasn't asked for, and we're giving it to the client security fund. We would respectfully suggest that that's
But
not
the board did not order that, right? Their recommendation was that shouldn't be in this. And,
right.
And your view is if that isn't in this case, then the discipline that the board recommended is the right amount of discipline. Is that correct?
Well, the
2 years, 1 year out?
We are suggesting that there should be an entirely state suspension, and we'll talk about why we think that should be. But the board did take out the $9,000. They didn't think that needed to be paid back. They didn't find a violation. They didn't find that that was a disciplinary issue. We can all agree that that should have been agreed upon, how that those funds should have been handled. And that's a good thing for the court to speak about.
Well, so counsel, that lawyers like will be I'd informed like to, I'd like that. To use your time a little more efficiently this morning. You're going to run out of time before you get where you want to be.
Right.
You are like an appellee here. You have won essentially at the board level. Your distinguished colleague behind you would like to increase the sanction. You would like to decrease the sanction, correct?
Right. And so we want to talk about why, and thank you. If you look at the mitigation in this case, we can look at it from the standpoint of a timeline. The relator's initial investigation started in March of 2011. It was closed in November of 2011. And Mr. Drexel is correct. They did a yeoman's job of sitting Ms. Corner down, trying to educate her, trying to supervise her, and it didn't sink in. And the reason it didn't sink in, we found out later, was because she was getting the education, but she was depressed and couldn't implement it. She wasn't organized and didn't have it together such that she could implement it. So she didn't implement it. And so we got the two overdrafts in July of 2012, okay?
So she wasn't under treatment or getting any other than the disciplinary counsel trying to assist her in her IOLTA responsibilities?
At that time, she wasn't, okay? So we're talking about 2011, 2012, she's not in treatment, okay? They come back with the overdrafts, and they asked her, and she was very honest and very cooperative, and that's one mitigating factor very strong here, because she not only cooperated with disciplinary counsel, but the Columbus Bar Association was involved, and that normally doesn't happen. Normally they consolidate it with one agency, but here she was, a depressed woman, having to answer to two different agencies.
Counsel,
that's not enough.
I want to make sure I understand your argument this morning, and I don't want to be argumentative.
Okay.
But as I understand, your position is no money is owed to any people at this time.
That's correct.
And that was found by the board.
That was found by the board, yes.
Okay. And your position is that the depression issue is here, but it is not really here because it was not found by the board, correct?
It was found by the board. And Mr. Drexel was correct. The board made a comment. This person was a mental health
professional.
Has
your client been medically diagnosed as suffering from depression?
She was.
By a competent physician?
He's not a physician. OLAP found that she was depressed. They testified at the hearing. The social worker did an assessment, found that she was depressed. She also went to another social worker, and that's who she was treating with. He's a qualified mental health professional who can diagnose.
She's engaged with an OLAP contract right now.
She is.
And she's compliant with that?
And she's compliant with that.
Okay. And what's her diagnosis?
Depression.
All right. And did they find the depression preceded her mismanagement of her IOLTA, or was it subsequent, or maybe wasn't found?
The board report says that there was a causal connection to her misconduct. It says that in the board report. So, yes, they found
has
that
your
it,
client
it was
had
related.
IOLTA counseling or training?
Pardon me?
Has your client had coursework or training on IOLTA account management?
She has. She has. And indeed,
did she have that in relation to these events?
Well, she had it before and after. Okay. She had it back in 2011 during their first investigation. They were very good about sitting her down, and she went to a Columbus Bar Association course, and she's had training afterwards as well.
Thank you.
So we don't believe that the Gertner's...
Counsel, let me ask you something. You know, mismanagement of IOLTA is one thing. You know, we have people that mismanage it for a variety of reasons. The misappropriation of the client's money for personal use is what I'm concerned about. You know, you want to say the IOLTA was due to her depression. Are you telling me that the mismanagement of her client's money was depression triggered?
The counselor said that, and the board did find that by saying that her conduct is causally related. And we'll tell you why. And it was true in this case. When a lawyer does not keep proper records, and, you know, they're not keeping ledgers, and that's why you've got rules to say that lawyers should. When they're not keeping these records, they don't know whose money belongs to whom. And, you know, they, and as Mr. Drexel pointed out, paying one client's back with another client's money, it all gets out of whack. And that's why you have to keep proper records. And she didn't do that. And it was a chaotic situation, which she now has under control. One of the things we presented at the hearing was under Exhibit D, we presented documents to show that she's now keeping the records properly. This is after she had been to counseling and things were better under control. She's now keeping the ledgers. And by the way, there are no new complaints against her regarding this.
Is there anybody monitoring her law office management right now?
No, there's nobody. There are no overdrafts, which is what triggered this to disciplinary counsel.
Does she have any funds in her IOLTA account?
Yes. As far as I know, she's still running her practice the same way that she normally does, as far as I know.
What's the nature of her practice?
The nature of her practice, and this is spoken to, and I'm glad you asked that, because there are very good character letters here. She represents a lot of people in an underserved community. She does criminal, domestic relations. She had a bankruptcy case here, and she's pretty much begged off of those because of the problems that arose in that Packer case. But she handles a community-based practice, helping people who sometimes otherwise would not have help. One of the cases that we have here is a personal injury case. Actually, several of them are with the IOLTA problems, so she does some of that.
Before you run out of time, is there a case that you can point us to as to what should be the guide for our view in imposing discipline?
Well, in our brief, we basically looked at the Talika case and the Falwell case, and I was actually counsel of record on the Falwell case. Those were also IOLTA mismanagement, misappropriation cases that involved a 2-year suspension with 1-year stay, and that's how the board came to their resolution. Neither of those cases involved a mental health condition or the type of mitigation that Ms. Corner has here. The other thing that I really wanted to point out is that when disciplinary counsel filed this complaint after the two overdrafts, they went all the way back. If you look at the counts that they prosecuted, these were matters, one of them went back to 2008, one of them went back to 2010, 2011. Only two of the matters related to new things that had happened. So out of the 9 people that were involved, Only two of the people were actually new misconduct. And this is the same investigation that they had closed before and said, we're not going to do anything. And because she bounced the two new checks, and I'm not being critical, they gave her a chance and she didn't follow through.
Yeah, so you're saying, you know, I wasn't disciplined. In fact, I was giving a kind of benevolent treatment.
Right.
I didn't take up on it. I didn't learn from my past mistakes. And now they go back and they say, you know what? They didn't tell her we will never prosecute these.
No, and I'm not criticizing that. My point is we should keep that in mind when we look at the sanction here. You know, 2 years for something that you were going to let go before with no time stayed, even in the face of a mental health condition, in our view, is excessive. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Drexel, you've used your time. You may take a minute.
I used it all anyway when I neglected to reserve time, but I just want to respond to a couple statements that Mr. Matthews said. First of all, I want to dispute his statement that the board found that Ms. Corner's depression was causally related to her misconduct. Mr. Cole, whom the board found not very credible witness, did say that he believed it was causally related, but the board never made that finding. Secondly, there was no finding in the board report that Ms. Packer had been paid. The last finding on the Packer matter was that that Ms. Corner acknowledged that she still owed this money nearly 3 years after the bankruptcy court had ordered it disgorged, and she acknowledged that she owed it, but it had not been paid, or at least in the board's report, it did not reflect that it had been paid. Mr. Matthews also said that there's no evidence of a complaint from Mr. Evans about the fees, and that's not correct either. Ms. Corner was asked by the assistant disciplinary counsel who tried the case whether Ms. Corner had received two letters from Mr. Evans in which he complained that he did not get all the money that he felt he was entitled to from the settlement, and she said, yes, she did get those, and she understood that he was upset that he did not get more of the money. And finally, the issue of that some of this misconduct occurred a significant time ago, that is true. Ms. Corner has been in private practice since the year 2000, and as best we've been able to determine, she did not even open her first IOLTA account until 2011. So
Mr. Drexel, I want to make sure, because I think this is an important case. Is the rule that you want us to announce today that when you take on a client from a former contingent fee contract, that the new contract must address who is paying the old lawyer?
And if it does not, then it's the successor lawyer who has the responsibility to pay it. That's correct.
Thereby treating the prior lawyer as co-counsel.
Exactly, in terms of the division of fees. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. We will take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Marshal, if you will adjourn court, please.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.